The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi guys, it's Nick here. Before we get started today, I want to talk to you about a charity that Squawker has supported for some time and that we think you should support too, Football Beyond Borders. Football Beyond Borders, or FBB for short, is a registered UK charity that puts a young person's passion for football at the heart of their education. They do this by running after-school programmes in schools across London, supporting young people at risk of exclusion through a combination of innovative football-themed classroom sessions and fun, high-quality football coaching. On Monday the 17th of October, Football Beyond Borders are hosting the annual Football for All event, highlighting the power of football to promote education and social inclusion. The night will feature a live debate run by their school students, new short films showcasing FBB's talented young people, and a panel discussion hosted by their patron, the renowned football pundit Guillaume Balague, who will be joined by special guests including Eniola Aluko, Leon Mann, and many, many more. So, details. The event will be held at Amnesty International's East London HQ from 7pm until 10pm. So that's Monday, the 17th of October, 7pm till 10pm. Tickets are just £7 or £5 concession if you're a youth or a student. And they can be bought by following this link, sqwk.at/FBB. That's sqwk.at/FBB, all lowercase. For further info, please join the Facebook event page, which will be updated with details and announcements about new special guests as they come in. Okay, that's enough from me. On with our Jürgen Klopp special.
Welcome back to the Squawker Talker podcast. I'm your host, Greg Johnson, and today we're going to be looking at Jürgen Klopp. The last 12 months at Liverpool, he was appointed as manager in place of Brendan Rodgers on the 8th of October, and since then, they've played 37 Premier League games, gone to one Europa League final, and yeah, we're going to look back at the year that's been and where he could be taking him next. I'm joined today by Amar Singh. How are you doing, Amar?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. Making his podcast debut as well, Sanj Atwal. How are you doing, Sanj?
Very good, finally. Thanks for letting me in the room.
Oh, no problem. No problem. There is usually a lock on the door, but we have opened it today.
Outside, to allow watching you guys. Absolutely. Doing it, I just want to join in.
But not in a creepy way, in a good way, in a good way. And also joining us is James McManus. How are you doing, James?
Very well, thanks for having me.
Here we are. It's been a year. If you were to sum up Klopp's first 12 months in one phrase, what would it be and why, Amar?
Does this have to be like a well-known phrase or can I just make up a phrase?
You can go very Brendan Rodgers if you want and bring out a horrible
like a cliche or something.
Absolutely.
Character. I haven't. I thought of two words, really. I thought emotional and entertaining. And I think the two things have gone hand in hand. I think he spoke a lot about emotional football when he came in. And I think Liverpool are a very emotional club. The fans love to watch, emotions run high at Liverpool when Liverpool are playing well. And I think he really identified that before he came to the club. And I think that has led to entertaining football as well. I think the two go hand in hand. So emotional and entertaining is my phrase.
Fantastic. Sanj, what's your phrase?
I've gone two words as well, interestingly. I've gone...
These aren't phrases, by the way, so we're going to let go. But, you know,
we're being loose with the definition, right? I've gone sound and colour.
Ooh.
Because the roar is back. We haven't had that in a long, long time. And the roar is kind of bending to his will. It's really weird. Like, fans are cheering. It's like, no, now's not the time to cheer. Everyone's like, oh, we're not allowed to cheer until Jürgen tells us we're allowed to cheer now. But when they cheer, they really cheer. And from the colour point of view, you can see the excitement on everyone's faces. Like, everyone's waving the flags. It's really, really great to see.
James?
Mine's two words, but it's got a hyphen in it, so we can count it as one word.
It's not gegenpressing, is it?
No, it's not. It's a grown-up. Ooh. Liverpool have a grown-up in charge again. Brendan Rodgers is not an adult football manager. He's not. He's an idealist. He's a child with toys. Whereas Jürgen Klopp is a grown-up. He's professional. He's serious. The players respect him. Everyone else now respects Liverpool because of that. Liverpool are a force again because we've got a grown-up in charge.
You've finished your gap year.
Basically, yeah. Gap year.
Gap year. But on that point, where were Liverpool this time last year. Not just talking about the stats, but in terms of the feel of the club, where the fans thought it was going. Sanj, do you want to take this one first?
Yeah, sure. Being a Liverpool fan these days is a pretty arduous task. And we were talking earlier on, and I kind of relate Liverpool in the Premier League era to Sisyphus, who was damned to push a rock up a hill, and just as he got to the top, it fell back down again and hit him in the face.
This is very highbrow.
That's what it's felt like, you know. Roy Evans almost got there. Rafa was so close. I'd argue that Rafa team was one of the best teams we've had. Almost
best team never to win the league.
Yeah,
I think,
almost won the Premier League. If it wasn't for Frederick Makeda's heel against Aston Villa, I think we probably would have won it.
Where is he now?
Exactly. This happens such a lot. And then obviously Rodgers was so close as well. And now I think fans are looking at that and thinking, is this going to happen again? This is kind of the feeling that started a year ago. So, are we now got to start pushing that rock back up that hill? Mm. The question is, are we going to make it to the top of the hill? Is that rock going to hit us in the face?
Just on that point, is that a bit of an indictment of Liverpool fans to some extent then? Because if a manager loses that momentum, are they able to win it back? Or once it's lost, like it was with Rodgers, is it possible to recover?
I absolutely think there is a huge psychological barrier that needs to be overcome, and that is only going to be overcome collectively at Liverpool as a club, as the fans, the global fan base. It will only happen once we've won the title.
Well, Klopp's, you know, that's quite a barrier for Klopp to breach. But, I mean, on current form, he's looking pretty good. What would you say is the kind of big difference compared to last year under Rodgers with Klopp now, Amar?
Well, I think he's galvanised the fans. I think he came in and he sort of said, this thing can be overplayed and underplayed sometimes, depending on how you look at it. But everyone watched Klopp at Dortmund, and Dortmund are a similar club to Liverpool. Really passionate fan base, really big working class support traditionally. Really loud fans.
He could have gone anywhere as well, really.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a Real Madrid. He's a top five coach.
A lot of
in
clubs were looking enviously at him.
Liverpool and I think, are not top five club, and yeah. He's a top five coach. So
absolutely, and I think he came in, and I think everyone was like, is he going to wave his magic wand and turn Liverpool into, you know, Dortmund 2012? Mm. And of course, that was not, you know, that's never going to be the case based on the budget and the players he had available to him. But what he did do was he said, right, the very first thing I need this team to start doing is to work hard. Mm. And he increased the work rate. He improved the fitness. And I think that was, you know, the very bedrock of what we're seeing now. Adam Lallana, for example, a great example of this. I mean, under Brendan Rodgers, he was the Nivea boy, you know, pirouetting, getting bullied off the ball all the time.
21st century vision of the white suits, maybe.
Exactly, exactly. And he, I think, is the personification of how Klopp has transformed the side, because now he's become this aggressive pressing machine, you know, really incisive, really creative, exactly the sort of player that we wanted when we signed him. Mm. And I think that's a good personification of the passion and actually the character, ironically, character being Brendan Rodgers' favourite word, that actually Klopp has instilled in the side, character he has.
James, just to come to you, in terms of where Liverpool were at 12 months ago.
Last game of 2014-15, lost 6-0 away to Stoke in Gerrard's last ever game, which is probably the worst send-off you can give any legend, basically. But then the first game of 2015-16, away at Stoke again, 1-0, and it looked like, oh, maybe this will pick up. But in Liverpool's first 8 games of last season, scored 8 goals. The creativity just completely sapped from the team. There was a cloud over the club because everyone knew Rodgers was on borrowed time. Even our transfer dealings that summer looked like they wasn't like the money was probably there, but they just didn't want to invest it in Rodgers, and they didn't trust him to make decisions. Mm. There were things that were happening behind the scenes where Mario Balotelli was bought last minute when everyone knew Rodgers didn't really want him, and it was just because Liverpool needed a striker. That wouldn't happen under Klopp now. Klopp would be like, okay, well, I'll just bring a kid through. I'm not having anyone foisted upon me that I'm not 100% sure on. Mm. Whereas Rodgers had lost his authority internally, and he looked desperate to other fans. It was easy to mock Liverpool back then. I don't think it is now.
Mm. Well, on that point of creativity, no side have created more chances in the Premier League since Klopp was appointed on October the 8th, 2015. I think they're also top of the table for chances created this season overall as well. Under Klopp, Liverpool are creating 13.81 chances per game in the league compared to 11.84 across the entirety of Brendan Rodgers' reign.
I've got a stat for that. Since Klopp took over Liverpool have created 471 chances in the Premier League, more than any other team. In that time, Man United have created 303. So Liverpool have created 168 more chances than Man United.
I think if you look at the composition of his preferred midfield now, you can see that creativity is actually is what comes first. He's a front foot manager. Henderson and Wijnaldum are players that look forward. They don't look back. They're not there as spoilers. Wijnaldum can play as a number 10. Henderson, let's remember, was signed as a chance creator. You know, FSG signed him based on Moneyball principles because of all the chances he was creating for Sunderland.
As a set piece taker, though, that was the
a lot of set pieces. But he's, you know, he's become an assist machine. You know, and then I think if you look ahead of him, obviously you've got Coutinho, Mane, who's been an absolute revelation, and Lallana, all creative players, all interchanging with each other as well. All hugely incredible, hugely unpredictable. And I'll say this because I'm old enough to say this, but I've not seen a Liverpool team this unpredictable and this creative since 87, 88, when they had Barnes and Beardsley and Houghton and Aldridge, and actually you didn't know who was going to score next.
It's not just the individuals. I'd say personally, and going by Mr. Jurgen Klopp himself, he might agree. He has said in the past, gegenpressing is the best playmaker there is, and besides the creativity, you look at the numbers of tackles Liverpool do in the opposition's half. Since Klopp took over, nobody comes close to them in terms of their tackles in the opposition's half. And under Klopp, 26.66% of Liverpool's tackles, fouls and interceptions have come in the opponent's half compared to 25.46% under Rodgers. So there has been a shift, and it's still shifting more that way as time goes on. But Sanj, I mean, you've written a fair bit for Squawker about the composition of the midfield and how this attack is starting to pick teams apart. How important is pressing to that system?
Pressing's integral. And what's been really interesting for me, having analysed all the Liverpool games so far this season, is actually how Klopp makes very, very nuanced changes from game to game. I mean, it's still playing the same game, but with different tactics. It's really, really interesting and fascinating. For example, in the Leicester game, it was very much, there was a front six. Because they knew there was no Kante in the Leicester team. He wasn't worried about that. And the reason why Liverpool just looked to have so many players up there is because they did. There was always six players ahead of the ball. And you even had Henderson at some point popping up in nine. And this also kind of comes back to why Firmino is ultimately preferred to Sturridge, because Firmino can perfectly adapt into that rotating front six in that particular instance. But then again, against someone like Hull, which was really interesting, it was Henderson that was actually sitting back. He wasn't getting into the nine position. He wasn't doing a rotation, but it was always one of Milner or Klein making up the front six. There's always six ahead of the ball when Liverpool are coming forward. And you mentioned assist machine earlier on. We've got to have a little word about James Milner as well. I don't think any player in Europe's top five leagues has got more assists with his weaker foot since the start of the year.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a machine. He's a machine.
He doesn't have a weak foot.
he can cross. Nothing about him is weak, is it?
Yeah,
he is just versatility in one man, isn't he? Another interesting stat to show kind of the progress of the gegenpressing system and what it's doing in an attacking sense is in Klopp's first 37 league games, 18 different players have scored for Liverpool. Now, no more than 15 players managed to score in a single league season under Rodgers, and in 37 league games, Rodgers' first 37 league games, you say, only 15 players scored as well. So there's more goal scorers. The goals are being spread around the team more. It sums up how unpredictable Liverpool have become.
Yeah, I mean, under Rodgers, it was, if Sturridge got injured, it was like, where's the goals going to come? It was so reliant on one player and his hamstrings, which is the situation Liverpool have been in countless amount of times.
One could say that team was hamstrung.
Oh, but it happened with Owen. It happened with Cisse to an extent. It's happened for years.
It never happened with Cisse. But maybe for about 5 minutes it happened with Cisse.
But I mean, that's the dearth of striking talent we had. We just used to buy strikers and stick them on the right wing or left wing because they were rubbish. But I mean,
it's a very German system, isn't it? The team comes first. The ethos comes first. This is why Sturridge sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
We'll come on to that.
He was yet to score a Premier League goal this season in the most creative, dangerous team in the country. So.
But like you say, one common thread that's been running through Liverpool for years has been an over-reliance on individuals. Gerrard, Torres, Suarez, you know, in particular in recent years. And now, actually, you look at that team and, Coutinho, I think, is probably the star player. You know,
really a star though. Even
he's not relied upon like Suarez was. He's not the focal point. Teams can't say, right, if we stop Coutinho, we will stop everyone. You know, we'll stop Liverpool. Actually, you know, Mane's pretty good. Actually, Lallana's pretty good. Actually,
there's
you know,
too many players. Firmino's pretty good. There's like five or six players ahead of the ball.
Yeah, and the defining personality of the team now is Klopp.
Mm, absolutely. I mean, on that point of Coutinho, it's interesting. He's currently top of Squawker's performance score ranking for top performing players in the Premier League this season. I think both in terms of total and per 90. So, however which way you want to cut it. And I think that it's interesting that he's there not because he's taking more on himself. He's actually learned to actually delegate more. Mm. He's making better decisions. He's feeding other players in, not just taking shots from 35 yards.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's really, really interesting is in Coutinho's first full season, he was most effective actually playing slightly deeper. Mm. I remember a game against Newcastle where Liverpool absolutely destroyed them. He was creating chances in the middle of the pitch, and that's where the incisiveness was coming from. And he's kind of lost that as time's gone on because of the necessity of losing Suarez. Mm. He's had to kind of take on that mantle, and you know the pressure on him to go and produce something out of nowhere is really, really tough. But now I absolutely agree. He's learned a new system and he's working very effective in a new system. But also, he's kind of touched upon it. He's got better players around him to be able to make those openings. Yeah. Why he and Firmino work very, very well. Lallana, you mentioned it, Amar, is an absolute revelation at the moment. He's now, I think, for the biggest thing that Klopp's on right now is he's fully weaponized Adam Lallana. Like the guy is a 44 caliber player now. Like, he is an absolute machine in terms of every aspect of the game.
And let's not forget he was top scorer in the Sam Allardyce era as well for England. England can thank Klopp
There's
for that as
question
well.
Question right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I remember I was actually at a Merseyside derby about 7-8 years, no, probably longer than that, probably 12 years ago. And
showing your age now, Macca.
Well, I am a little bit. And I wore like 7 Liverpool shirts. I wore them all. I took all my tops as on a day out to Anfield. And I remember Steven Gerrard passing it to Antonio Nunes on the right wing, realising Gerrard, you could see Gerrard realised who he'd passed it to and then ran over to Antonio Nunes and just took the ball off him. He was like, oh my God, I've given it to that guy we got, like a bar of soap and Michael Owen. I've given the ball to him. But like now all the Liverpool players actually trust each other with the ball. There's no, I think the fact that there's no star, we say Coutinho's the star. For me, Mane is. Mm. Mane is the danger man. Coutinho, but it creates space because other teams don't know which one to pick out and who to mark. With Arsenal, you play Arsenal, you go, oh, we stop Ozil, we stop Sanchez. But if we stop Cazorla, we stop Ozil and we stop Sanchez. So you cut off the supply line. There's no one way of play at Liverpool. There's no supply line. There's no like funnel of creativity. It comes from everywhere in all angles.
Absolutely. Mm. We discussed it in a piece a few weeks ago, and we called it the chaos engine. Because it is chaos if you're an opposition centre-back. And again, I'll hop back to the Leicester game.
Well, it's almost chaos for Liverpool as well when the midfield is against Burnley, when it didn't quite work. It can feed
that's
back on
you. That's an entirely
different
point, which we can come on to in a second.
Okay.
But it's very much a case of even when the action's on the right-hand side and Klein's like playing a couple of lovely interchange passes and they're trying to work an opening, take a moment to look at what's going on in the box. There'll be four Liverpool players in there and you won't be able to guess which ones they are. There'll just be four Liverpool players in there. And in some cases, it doesn't really matter. Mm. I mean, you saw in the whole game, you had Milner coming in at the flying in the back post, almost scoring a header at the back post. So where did he come from? and the movement and the odd angles that people come running in from. Mm. It's so weird. Like you're watching it and you're really slowing down the game. Going, how do they know this? How have they, the work that's been going on behind the scenes is incredible. I think Pep Linders actually has a lot to do with it as well.
I think the term that Klopp has used, I think it was Ian Ayre who said it this week, was not hurrying, but speeding things up, you know, and Liverpool have added this tempo in attack and there's no panicking, you know, you can see the players are, confident and comfortable what they're doing, but they're circulating the ball quickly. Moving quickly and giving each other options really quickly, which makes such a huge difference.
There's a great video on Twitter. Ed A Football is the guy who posted it up. He writes for the Tonkin's Times, and there's a great video showing the diagonal runs that Liverpool's forward players are doing, and especially Firmino. He's basically running across the box, very selflessly because he takes himself out of a shooting position. And it just opens up space for one or two midfielders to just surge into the box, basically unopposed. And that's the thing; it's where at least three or four of your goals have come from this season. So. Yeah, I mean, whatever Klopp's doing, they're clearly buying into.
Yeah, I think Firmino, in many ways, has been the key to unlocking how this side plays. He's the prince of high pressing for Klopp. I think just came from the Bundesliga, knows exactly how Klopp wants to play, is in many ways the intelligent front man that makes it all click. Mm. So I think he's as a focal point for the team. it's brilliant, but like I say, it also means that I think it's the beginning of the end for Daniel Sturridge at Liverpool. It certainly looks like that.
Wow. Well, we're going to get onto that again a little later on. But right now, I spoke to Dan Kennett of the Anfield Index earlier on the stats behind Liverpool's pressing. Anfield Index, if you don't know, do some great work looking at some very specific stats to do with the pressing Liverpool have been doing. I also spoke to him about Klopp's impact and the weaknesses that he still has to work on over the next 12 months.
The main improvements in the Klopp have been in the attack. I'd say the last 10, 15 games of last season, that was when the first real positive signs started coming in terms of the chance quality up front and the goal and the shot conversion and the goals returning to the game. So yeah, I think that's the biggest thing he's done. And then basically from this season, it's just skyrocketed. I'd say where we are now is pretty much by all the things I look at, a top four level attack. In terms of the goal scored and the chance quality and how much has been created. I mean, my favourite personally is big chances, Opta's big chances, because it's a really good proxy for an expected goals model if you haven't got one. And we're, you know, this season we're pushing up to the magic area is about three big chances a game, and to really be in contention for top four. And this season for Klopp, we're just under that 2.45. You know, you don't need an Iniesta if you can gegenpress. It makes sure that the teams have men caught upfield, they don't have the defence set, and then you win the ball back in very good areas, often central, and then that makes it extremely easy for even more limited attacking players to have good chances. Whilst we like defensive errors because, you know, it tells you what teams do on the ball, it's not the totality of teams, how often they make mistakes. And what we do is we decided to... We agreed our own definitions up front about what we're going to collect. And basically, Gags does collect this himself after every match. And he records every time a player presses an opponent and then the end result. And then he also records the zone of the pitch and the XY coordinates and how many other people were involved in that press, whether it was an individual press, whether it was a two or three or four, even four. So what you'll find is somebody like Lana, who hasn't got the greatest pace, he makes a lot of pressing actions, but he quite often can get bypassed by tricky players. So his efficiency is generally quite low. But the real star is always is Firmino. And I think what has helped us is after Klopp was on Monday Night Football, it was a kind of an endorsement, because he basically said that, you know, with Firmino, 50% of his role is defensive, even though he plays as the focal point of the team. So you're 50% attack and 50% defence. So you can't ever analyse Firmino's performance without looking at the defensive work of what he does, because that's what he's been asked to do by the manager. And nine times out of ten, he leads the team in how often he presses, and also his efficiency is also one of the best in the team. He's just, I think someone like Son as well at Spurs, you know, and Lamella, they're outstanding at it as well. But I think Firmino is probably one of the best in the league, if not the best, in terms of harrying defenders and absolutely being a constant pest. And and I think we saw that at Swansea. You know, he still worked and worked and worked, and in the end, he just harried them into a mistake. I think one of the defenders kicked the ball directly up in the air, and then he was pestering for the rebound, and then somebody just steamed right into him and gave away a clear pen. And I think that was a triumph for basically Firmino's off the ball work in that in that game and what he generally does. I don't think I'd hold my hands up, but I don't think Liverpool have got any world class players in the team at the moment. We've got some very good ones, but the system is king under Klopp. If you took individuals out of this system and you put them in other teams, you think, well, what's all the fuss about? You know, but that's the whole idea of what he's trying to do. He's trying to create a team which is far more than the sum of its parts. So you can have average to good players, and the end result be very, very good indeed. The Achilles heel is the defence, and particularly aerially, we have a real weakness against teams who cross. We don't allow that many crosses coming in. Only we're the fewest in the league, but we just get so much, teams cause so much damage from when they do manage to cross. And this is open play, corners, set plays, it's everything. I think it's more of a centre-back problem than a goalkeeper problem, personally. And maybe that, you know, we've chosen to play with the Henderson in the deeper role. And, you know, he's very good offensively, but I don't think he adds the same level of solidity as some other teams has got. So it's that defence, the two centre-backs and the guy in midfield, in the deepest midfielder, it's still a bit soft, especially against teams who are good in the air. So I think the next three games are going to be pivotal for Liverpool's United, Palace and West Brom. And if we can get six points from those three, I think we could be really on course this season. But you know, to do something really good. But I got quite a bad feeling about these three games, because I think it's going to be a huge test of our biggest weakness.
That was Dan Kennett of the Anfield Index talking about the stats behind Liverpool's pressing, the players that have impressed him the most, and what could be next for the Reds. Guys, I'm going to come to you now and ask, what surprised you most about Klopp? Bit of a curveball here, positive or negative, Amar?
For me, I think he's been ruthless. We all know that he's the guy who loves to hug the players. We all saw that at Dortmund. We all know he's an emotional manager. He's very good on the kind of people management side of things, but he's been ruthless as well. I mean, Balotelli's quotes this week about how Klopp was like, see you later, mate, was quite sort of cold with him.
Sacco as well,
Sacco is the great example, right? I mean, here's a player who's really endeared himself to the fans, had some great performances last season, but Jurgen Klopp has decided that he hasn't shown the necessary discipline that he expects from him in the team, and has not wasted any time in actually just shutting him out of that team, much to the dismay of a lot of fans, but right now, who are we to question that decision? So he's been pretty ruthless.
Mm. James, what surprised you the most about Klopp?
I think it is... I mean, he was mocked quite a lot for... I think it was after a 1-1 draw at home. He was celebrating in a line with all the players in front of the crowd. And it was kind of used as a way to mock Klopp when he first came in. United fans were all hopping all over it. They were like, oh, look at him, how ridiculous he is. But it hasn't surprised me how passionate he is, but... Like when he's like in your corner, he's like your guy. It is quite surprising how much it has an effect around everywhere.
Mm.
Like there's no home games have an atmosphere again now. It's not just like the great European nights that like Burnley would have an atmosphere now at home. And he's kind of injected back into Liverpool exactly what it needed. Like there's no like tourist feel to a Liverpool game anymore. It is proper fans singing their hearts out.
I think that moment where he took the team over to the Kop, it was after the West Brom draw.
It
was all very calculated by Klopp, because previously he had kind of thrown down the gauntlet to Liverpool fans. He saw people walking out when Liverpool were behind in another game, and he said, I don't want the fans to abandon us. We felt alone as a team because fans were walking out.
Mm.
And that was one example where the team stayed, and this was before the great comeback against Dortmund that came a few weeks later. And Origi scored that great equaliser, and they went over and they thanked the fans. And yeah, exactly. In this world of social media, people were mocking Liverpool, you know, without really taking the context into it. And I thought it was very clever, very calculated.
Mm. And you see your Pep Guardiola do that with Manchester City after winning the Manchester derby. And a lot of people said that's one thing he learned from being Bayern Munich manager. So it's definitely a strain of German football culture coming into Liverpool as a club. But Sanj, what's the thing that surprised you the most about Klopp?
Well, there's lots of things we knew about Klopp. I mean, he's quite hard to miss, isn't he, really, with what he did at Dortmund. But I think the thing that surprised me
most
is...
He's also 6'4", isn't he?
Yeah, he's
a big
guy. Very, very hard to... and then the bleached hair as well. So quite hard to see miss out the T-pointing. But I think the thing that really surprised me that I wasn't quite aware he had in his armoury is how creative he can be with players and how he can look at their strength. Not only go, I want you to go and do this, but sell it to them as well. Like in that way, the biggest one for me is James Milner. He's now left back, and he's a top goal scorer for greatest penalties. He's a top goal scorer at Liverpool. He is doing a blinding job at left back as well. Like he's very hard to beat, and like you give him a job, he's going to go do it. But remember why he came to Liverpool? Because he was promised centre mid.
Mm.
He was promised centre mid, and Klopp's come in. He's looked at his, analysed him, and goes, you know what? Nah, you're not going to fit in this front six unless you're bombing down from left back. That's going to be your role. Do you want it? And was clearly going, hell yeah, I will do that for you. That's great. Very, very creative. I don't know any other manager would have gone and done that.
Mm. And you look at his Dortmund teams, guys like Schmelzer and Piszczek, they were fullbacks, but they kind of stepped forward to support the midfield. So it almost suits him to have a midfielder play in that role to some extent.
He did it with Kevin Grosskreutz. Mm. He turned him from a right midfielder into a right back.
Yeah.
And I think there's never been a player that's left Dortmund and been a massive, apart from Lewandowski, there's never been a player that's left Dortmund and been a huge success elsewhere, like Sahin, Kagawa. They've all gone away and come back. They've all gone away, come back because they kind of flopped.
Mkhitaryan could be a.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's looking that way, isn't it already? Because Mkhitaryan doesn't fit Man United's system. Mm. Everyone thought, oh, where's he going to fit in at Man United? It turns out he doesn't, and And also because you have Wayne Rooney and you've got to shoehorn him into the squad. So Klopp creates a culture where he gets the best out of players. He's a coach first and foremost. He says repeatedly, I don't think he likes transfer windows. He doesn't like signing players. He doesn't like selling players. But he's, like I mentioned earlier, referenced earlier, he's a grown-up. And his job one at Liverpool was to get rid of the dead wood and coach the players that he's got. He's coaching a level of performance out of players that is above what you'd expect from them. Like, James Milner is a top three left back in the Premier League at the moment, and he's not a left back. So first and foremost, it shows what a great coach he is.
We're talking about expectations and improvements. Just a few stats here that might tickle your fancy. 79% of Liverpool's passes are now forward, which is the highest proportion of their passes since 2013-14, when obviously they went very close to winning the title. But on that note, Guy Rogers, Squawker's head of gaming, who has been modelling the Premier League this season based on performances so far and the schedule teams have been doing, has Liverpool to finish top with 87 points, 6 points ahead of second and third, which is City and Spurs tied on second.
I remember during the 2013-14 season, on BBC's website, there's like a fixture generator, a result generator, and it was probably like 10 games out. And everyone, you type in all your fixtures, all your results for like the remaining 10 rounds of Premier League games. And I had Liverpool winning the league by like 8 points. And whenever you do that, you're like, that's going to happen. And then it started narrowing. And I remember there was an odd going around, or like a calculation going around at the time, where Liverpool were top by 5 points from City. And it was like Liverpool have a 75% chance of winning the Premier League this season. I was like, can Liverpool screw this up? Oh, yeah, okay, we have screwed up.
Well, on that, but what do you think is still to come? Having heard those numbers, Amar, does that fill you with hope? Could this be Liverpool's year?
I think Liverpool will finish in the top four. I'm confident of that. Not being in Europe is going to be of massive benefit to the squad. You can see that already. The Manchester United game coming up on the 17th is massive, as it always is, but I just think, you know, if Liverpool win that, then they go 6 points ahead of Manchester United. Manchester United, with all the starry acquisitions that they've made this summer, including Mourinho, I think that's a huge statement. But looking at the rest of the Premier League, Manchester City, of course, under Guardiola, look stronger than ever. Tottenham are looking pretty good, particularly after beating Manchester City. And I think Arsenal, after losing to Liverpool on the first day of the season, first weekend of the season, have only, you know, gone one way up the table. So it's going to be a really, really close fight this year. And you know, once again, I think Liverpool will be involved in that fight.
Sanj, even if they don't get the title this season, I mean, I think there's a lot of enthusiasm and expectation over what could be under Klopp in the years to come. But what do you think needs to happen in terms of the players that still need to be moved on, the areas to improve, and the weaknesses that still make you wince on a match day?
Well, the very obvious one is our defending from set pieces. This isn't a new thing. We've had this for ages. Like, I don't know what it is about Liverpool with set pieces. Apart from that one Rodgers season where we were just scoring from every corner coming in, it's always been tough at both ends of the pitch. We've never really been that team. I think that instability is definitely a thing. Towards back end of last season, when Sarko and Lovren, Moreno and Klein got a good run between them, actually, we were pretty good. That was a pretty good defence. The weakness there came from two things. One, Moreno and general decision making.
He's an absolute
if he is a word I could use in this scenario. Yeah. Also, actually, the biggest thing last season, and why we lost games maybe shouldn't have done, was the lack of a central defensive midfielder experience that could actually block off. Because if you run at any defence, if you let people run at your defence, you will concede goals. I don't care who you are. You can be Italy, you're still going to concede goals if you allow that. And Liverpool are allowing that too often. And actually, the key to getting the defence better is actually right now, it looks like that the crux between the centre-backs and Jordan Henderson. Mm. That's actually what's making the defence better. But set pieces is a whole other thing. So that needs to be sorted out. I mean, I think Sarko will
Loris Karius's performance against Swansea didn't fill me with hope. He looks very jittery. He looks very indecisive.
It's like when De Gea first came to the Premier League.
Yeah. He needs to settle down, doesn't he?
Suspect under aerial bombardment, basically.
Yeah. So the question has to be, is he going to turn into De Gea or is he going to turn into Taibbi?
Wow.
James, where do you think Liverpool and Klopp will be in another 12 months from now? Having seen what you've seen so far, where can it go?
I think an established top three club is the aim. I think City under Guardiola look like the ones to beat. I think Wenger might be gone by from Arsenal maybe end of this season. So I think that throws up instability on Arsenal's end. Chelsea are going through a real identity crisis. And Man United are really, they're spending money wildly, but there's no plan in place. So there's a real gap there for Liverpool. Like Spurs, there's a real gap for a club to push through and establish themselves. Last year, Leicester won the league. It's a freak occurrence. Everyone knows it because it was like the tallest dwarf. Like everyone was just shooting themselves in the foot constantly every weekend. Whereas now...
Just a bunch of dwarfs shooting themselves in the foot. That's a weird Disney film.
That's a very different pod, man.
There's an image for you all to take away with you. But Liverpool actually look like an established, serious, credible force now. And I think it goes under the radar that Klopp is an attraction for players coming in. Mm. Liverpool are going to be able to attract a Category A player now because they have Jurgen Klopp. Brendan Rodgers had no real pull in the market. Say
he got Joe Allen.
Exactly, the Spanish Xavi. But
Welsh Xavi.
Welsh Xavi. Xavi is actually
Xavi's
Spanish,
the Spanish Xavi. Yeah.
Xavi's Welsh, yeah. Wow.
But like, say Liverpool go for Aubameyang in the summer and they're competing against Real Madrid, you'd still fancy Real Madrid, but there's like it makes sense maybe a bit now, whereas like...
Yeah, I think a lot of fans were looking for Klopp to get Götze this summer, right?
Yeah.
Get Götze, he's available. And in the end, Liverpool spent big on Mane. And now you're looking at that decision as an absolutely blinding, brilliant decision by Klopp and Liverpool. So I think there needs to be some faith in him. But in the same instance, you look at Joel Matip, what a signing that is from the Bundesliga, on a free, and immediately the defence looks better with him there.
Well, Mark, one thing I want to ask on that. We said earlier that Klopp is a top five manager within world football, could have gone to Real Madrid. He could now attract Real Madrid's standard players, but... would they fit into his system? Because the thing with Klopp, it's all about hard work. It's all about graft. It's not about
ego. He's never bought
ego.
A star, has he?
Exactly. So should Liverpool be looking to continue not buying stars and instead getting Klopp the raw materials to make the players he needs?
Yeah, I mean, I think Liverpool are a long way from having this kind of Florentino Perez Galactico style system, which is now being replicated by Manchester United, strangely enough, as well. You know, let's just get the stars and see if we can make it work. I don't think, you know, that's not what Klopp is about. That's not what FSG are about as well in terms of how they structure the commercial model there and how they like to buy players based on potential. In actual fact, Klopp is a really good fit for them because he's all about realising the potential of young players, which is exactly what he did at Dortmund. Nobody had heard of half of those superstars at Dortmund who became superstars under him. So I think, you know, I think with Liverpool, there is always going to be a corner of the fan base who want star names. And look, if a star name is a star name because they're going to fit the system, then absolutely. But I think it's all about fitting the system. And I think Daniel Sturridge is a great example. I'm a big fan of Daniel Sturridge, scores goals. You know, his goals per games ratio is up there with the best in Europe. However, he looks like a square peg in a round hole in this system. He really does. Against Swansea, when he came on early and played more during that game because of Lallana's injury. That's probably one of the worst performances I've seen from Sturridge because he just seemed to be on a completely different wavelength to the rest of the team.
I think Sturridge can play a 9 out of 10 game, but the three people around him will have a 5, 6 out of 10 game.
Yeah.
Whereas you stick Firmino up there, he'll have a 7 out of 10 game, and the people around him will have a 7, 8 out of 10 game. He makes those around him play better, whereas Sturridge will perform very well. He'll score a goal. I think he's the best natural finisher England have probably had since Owen. But Sturridge doesn't fit the system, like Amar said. I don't think it's about pressing. I think we make out that Sturridge doesn't press and he's quite lazy. He's not at all. He's a hard working player, just as Firmino is. But like Amar said, he's of his time. He's of a Liverpool that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
He's of Rodgers. He's like the last remnant of Rodgers Liverpool. Sturridge is. So, I mean, he's an excellent player. And say he moved to Spurs next summer or West Ham, they've essentially got a 15. Guaranteed goal of the season striker if he's fit. But
well,
he's
just fit maybe more than that as well.
But he just doesn't fit the system. Firmino makes those around him play better. Sturridge doesn't.
The big question for me is what's going to happen with Emre Can this season, right? Because we were all looking at him this summer. A lot of question marks over Henderson. He didn't end the season very well last season. And we were all looking at Emre Can as being the kind of fulcrum of the team. The guy that Klopp, you know, gives instructions to, the future captain, the captain in waiting. I don't think people would have been surprised if actually Klopp made him his captain this summer. And of course, he picked up an injury. He's been in and out of the team. He looks peripheral at the moment. He's not getting in ahead of Henderson and Wijnaldum, who've really developed a good partnership. So it's going to be interesting to see how Klopp, you know, utilises Emre Can. I mean, I don't think he's going to put him at centre-back like Brendan Rodgers did.
No.
But, you know, I think Emre Can and also, you know, to a lesser extent, Mario Gruic, those are two midfielders who potentially, you know, could be the heart of Liverpool's midfield for 10 years.
So to wrap up the pod, we've alluded to it earlier, but Klopp's definitely changed the vibe, the feeling at Anfield. In fact, with the expanded new stand, Klopp's football has helped to bring in the biggest attendance at the stadium since 1977. All eyes are on Klopp, so I'm going to ask the guys in the pod, what's been your favourite Jurgen Klopp moment so far? Amar, you first, please.
I can't pick one moment, but what I will say is I've never seen a manager just have so much fun in his post-match interviews. They're usually so dour and depressing. He literally will just crack up laughing in the middle of them. And I just think that's so refreshing. So the many, many times that he's cracked up laughing and the time he said boom as well, which has, of course, become this big thing now with Liverpool fans. So, yeah, those are my favourite moments from Klopp.
James?
I think on Monday Night Football, when he went on, he was just a different level of analyst. That's how Klopp made his name back home in Germany when he was Mainz manager. I think it was 2002 World Cup. He was
06.
Like 06, yeah. He was like, it was him and Beckenbauer. And Klopp was about 37, 38 then, so a very young manager. Mm. And Beckenbauer was there in the studio going, yeah, this guy gets it. But when he went on Monday Night Football, like they've had Koeman on before. They've had very good level of manager, Carragher, Neville. And their analysis is excellent. But when Klopp went on there, it just looked like a different level. Yeah. And there were Liverpool fans moaning on Twitter, don't give away the store. Stop telling them all our secrets. But he's so clever that he's saying one thing and he definitely means the other thing.
Yeah.
So he's playing mind games by going on Monday Night Football. And he's just a very, very clever guy. And I like that when his first press conference, he was just kind of like, yeah, it's just football, isn't it? We all go home at the end of the day. So it's just fun. Like, it's not, we shouldn't take it so seriously.
Yeah.
And that's kind of permeated around the club. That it's just a hobby. It's just sport. It's like, it shouldn't be taken as life or death. It's not life or death, Bill Shankly. It's let's have a bit of fun and go home at nine, sort of, with Klopp. It's so much better.
Let's have a stein or two.
Well, that's definitely. Stein or several. Stein or several.
Yeah, definitely. Sanj, what's been your big Klopp moment?
I'm probably going to go two, if that's okay. But
why not? Why not, eh?
First of all, just that his first press conference. The first press conference, when you woke up in the morning, it's about 11 o'clock or something. It was an unusual time on a Friday for Liverpool to do something. But it broke overnight. I remember waking up that day going, oh my God, we've got Jurgen Klopp. This isn't real. Something's going to happen. And then watch that press conference. Maybe everyone in the office was gathered around the TV. Going, it's happening. He's actually there. And he was just so refreshing. He's actually generally seemed like a really brilliant guy. Mm. And he obviously had passion. He'd done his research. And he was just saying all the right things, but then again, you're like, oh, but lots of people have said the right things. Rodgers kind of said the right things
because he thought he had to. He thought he had to win favour. Klopp's his own man. He doesn't care about winning favour. He's just like, this is who I am, take it or leave it. Whereas Rodgers was like, oh, I'll praise this guy because it makes me sound good.
Yeah, how am I doing, boss?
Yeah, how am I doing, boss?
Yeah. Absolutely. They always say that the best actors in the world are the ones that they're just like that anyway. That's why their performances are so good. Mm. I think he's like that. But my other one is very much after the Villarreal game last year. We were 1-0 down, and he managed to pick up the team in such a great way. I mean, I watched that game at the Liverpool Supporters Bar in LA, of all places, and I was just so disappointed that we're losing. But then seeing him going around the pitch and picking up the players, I was like, yeah, we can do this. Sure enough, we spanked them 3-0, and they didn't have a look in. It was so easy. I was like, how did we just do that? It's amazing.
But I'm gonna name another thing as well. it was the game against Norwich last season, that unbelievable game where Lallana scored the winner in injury time. I think Liverpool won 5-4, and Klopp absolutely lost it. He went sprinting down the touchline. Yeah, he beckoned the players to come to him, and they all ran towards him. They all hugged him. His glasses went flying, and it was just happy days are here again at Liverpool. There was just a classic moment of just togetherness in the club, and that permeates through the whole club, the fans all over the world, and it was just a really nice moment for the team.
The Dortmund game was like ridiculous as well. Like, Dortmund are a world class team. The Liverpool team that turned out wasn't anywhere near as good as the team Liverpool have now, and that was just it was a crazy game. I was at a pub, and I was like to my friends, it was like 3-1 down. I went, oh, this is done. And they went, oh, you sure you don't want to stay? And I was like, oh, go on then. I'm so glad I did, because I'd have been ribbed for the rest of my life that I missed this Dortmund comeback. but the Dortmund game is probably the standout game for me because they're a top five team in the world. No, we keep making top five, top three references.
High fidelity.
I'm doing my best John Cusack impression in the corner here, but it's Liverpool are a top 20 team. There's another one for you, but Dortmund are a top five team and outplaying a team loads better than you is just so refreshing to see. It just doesn't happen very often at Liverpool for last 10 years anyway.
Well, they might have to do that to win the title this season if they are to go and do it, because as we say, City are there, Spurs are there, Arsenal there as well. You can't count them out just yet. But anyway, that's been 12 months of Jurgen Klopp, a podcast special from Squawker. Thank you very much for joining us. Amar, thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
Sanj, thank you for making your debut.
Thank you for having me. I hope to come back again.
No, absolutely. And James, thank you for coming on as a regular, as you always do.
I'm just in this seat 24/7, just waiting for you to come in this room now.
That's not the seat. You're now the furniture.
I am part of the furniture.
Do check out squawker.com for more great videos, podcasts, analysis, articles, anything you like on football around the world. Join us again soon for another podcast and see you soon.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.